This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com, podcasting freedom.
Oh, this is Mark Vandenberg, the executive producer over at the Gun Rights Radio Network, and you're listening to the Handgun World podcast with your host, Bob Main. Now, hey, I got to meet Bob last year live in person, and he's just as great in person as he is on the show.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And even if I could carry a cop, he or she may not have a duty to protect me. So that means I take my personal defense seriously, and I take it into my own hands. And so I choose to carry a gun every day, wherever it's legal to carry. So this episode, I want to talk about something that's pretty much in the news quite a bit today if you follow gun writers and if you follow gun rights activists and people like that. So I'm going to start with that. I'm cruising in the Handgun World mobile studio, actually the mobile rental studio, because if you've been following me on Facebook, I hit a deer with the old Honda a couple weeks ago, and I got a guy kind of tweaking it up for me and doing some minor fixes on it so that I can get my headlight replaced and a few other things like that. So I'm enjoying a rental studio right now, rental mobile studio. I want to talk about gun rights. Specifically, I want to make some comments about the firing of Dick Metcalf from Guns and Ammo magazine. And if you guys don't know what all that is all about, I will explain it briefly. And I also want to talk about some comments that have been made about me, about yours truly. So let's start with gun rights. In case you didn't know, Dick Metcalf, a longtime gun writer, a very prolific and successful gun writer for about 30 years, most recently, he was writing for Guns and Ammo magazine. He was fired. He was fired because of a column that he recently wrote. And basically, I'm not going to go over the whole column and all the details point by point and stuff like that, but I'll give you the gist of it. He basically put out the idea that some gun regulation is okay, that it's okay to have some regulations on some of our rights, and he made the comparison to other regulations on other rights that we have, and pretty much said that it's not always unconstitutional to have some regulations on our gun rights. Now, what do you think about that? So he was fired. He was fired from Guns and Ammo. Now, you know, I asked, what do you think about that? I'm going to tell you what I think about it. Let's start with the basic premise of his article and his column. I want to go on record today. By the way, if you hear a noise in the background, of course, it's my GPS. I want to go on record right now saying that I do not support regulation of our gun rights. There seems to be a misunderstanding. A lot of people think I do. A recent person who commented on iTunes took me to task, kind of blasted me on iTunes in the comments section on my show, the reviews, because he said that I agree with Dick Metcalf and that I'm part of the problem and that I do not support the Second Amendment. Or he says I'm hurting the cause of fighting for the Second Amendment. Now, last time I checked, I've had many listeners who have emailed me and said that they've joined the NRA, they've joined the Second Amendment Foundation, they've gotten involved in shooting sports, they're taking training classes, many of them are getting motivated to carry a gun and so forth because of what they hear on my show. Now, that's flattering, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, I'm just telling you the facts of what people are telling me. That's just the feedback that I'm getting. And it's great because that's my whole purpose, folks. My whole purpose is to motivate each and every one of you to get involved in the shooting sports, to carry a gun, to exercise your rights, the God-given rights you have. So how can somebody say that I'm hurting the Second Amendment cause. Obviously, this person has not listened to all my shows, and obviously they've not taken into account some of the things that I've done to help move the cause forward. Whatever, that's okay. They're entitled to their opinions. This is a free country. That's what's great, is we're all entitled to our opinions. My opinion is that I do not support government regulation of our rights. And several months ago, I made some statements that training should be required to carry a gun. Now, you've heard me all say it's important to have an open mind. And I think having an open mind is critical, not just when it comes to gun rights, but it's critical when it comes to life. Would you agree with me on that? So my open mind has caused me to change my thinking. So I'm going to go ahead and do a reversal here. I'm going to change my mind on something. I am open-minded, and I can be persuaded, folks. See, I'm not arrogant enough to think that, well, my view is correct, and it's always correct, and no one's going to change my mind. I read some Facebook comments from some people I respect saying, well, Bob, you're never going to change my mind on this. Really? You know how I take that? If you tell me I'm never going to change your mind, to me that sounds somewhat closed-minded. I really hope that you are of the mindset that if something makes sense and there's a good case for it and it makes a lot of sense and it's right for you, that you would consider changing your mind if it's going to help you. Don't be so closed-minded to fold your arms and say, well, you're never going to change my mind on that. You see, I think you limit growth. You limit your growth when you do that. There's a lot of people that won't come to training classes because they don't want to learn anything new because they're closed-minded. So just be careful about that. I don't think that I have all the answers, and I'm the first one to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I was wrong about something, so I'll go ahead and I'll say it right now. I was wrong about that. I was wrong about making the statement that training should be required or that training should be mandatory to carry a gun. Now, most of you know I'm a huge believer in training, but I understand the slippery slope. If a government requires mandatory training to carry a gun, that's a slippery slope. You guys persuaded me otherwise. Congratulations. And I mean that, because giving that kind of control to the government is giving them too much control, and they'll abuse it just like government officials always seem to do. Politicians and government always seem to abuse their power. We see that going on today, don't we? So I am going to go ahead and retract my statements earlier. You see, I don't mind doing that because it helps me grow and it helps me open my mind, and I don't sit back and say, that's my opinion and I'm standing firm on that and I'm never going to change. Dangerous, dangerous position to take if you say you're never going to change. Just kind of remember that. Okay, so now that I no longer believe that training should be mandatory to carry a gun, and certainly never mandatory to own a gun either, I will say this. I am going to stand by statements that I've made, and basically a statement that Paul Lathrop from the Politics and Guns podcast, when he phoned in a voicemail, he basically said that it's not real responsible if you don't get training. And I agreed with him. I think he said it was socially unacceptable or not responsible or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But I will say this, that I agree with anybody else who agrees that you're not being very responsible if you don't get training with your handgun. And you know why I say that? It's not so much that I think that you're going to be a danger to others. What I think about that is if you don't get some decent training, it's going to limit your effectiveness with your handgun. Let me say that again. It's going to limit your ability to be effective and to do the job that you need to do, which is why you carry a gun. You carry a gun to protect your life, right? You carry a gun to protect the lives of your loved ones. If your spouse or your child is being viciously attacked and their life is in danger, don't you want to be as effective as you possibly can? Is it not somewhat irresponsible if you don't maximize your ability to use the powerful tool you have, which is called a gun. So I am going to stand by that. Now, I've been taken to task for that too. I've been taken to task by other podcasters saying I'm trying to divide the gun community. No, I'm not trying to divide the gun community by saying I think it's irresponsible if you don't get training. Hey, and by the way, you can go back and listen to some of my earlier shows before I became an instructor. I'll say that again. Before I became an instructor, go back and listen to some of those earlier shows. I was a huge advocate of getting training. Some people are accusing me of pushing training because I'm an instructor. You know what, folks? I get very, very, very small percentage of the gun owners coming to my training. As a matter of fact, out of the what, 80 million gun owners, or how many millions do we have? When you figure out how small of a fraction that is that actually come to my classes, give me a break. If you think I'm pushing training because it's a profitable venture for me, I don't know what it is that you're smoking, because I'm not getting a fraction. The fraction of the number of gun owners I'm getting is so minuscule that I don't even know if you can measure it. There's not really a number that's that small. So think about that. That's kind of ludicrous. I used to push training, and I used to get involved in training, and I used to take training long before I became an instructor. So I'll just go on record. But I want you to be as good as you can be. And that's what I mean when I say it's slightly irresponsible for you to not get training once you purchase a gun. And with every gun that you own. So if you have a handgun, train with that. If you got a shotgun, train with that. If you have a rifle, train with that. Know how to use them, because when the crap hits the fan and someone wants to attack you, would you agree that's the wrong time to be learning how to use your weapon? So that's what I meant by that. But regarding Dick Metcalf, this is something that bothers me. Okay, first of all, I don't think he did much. I mean, he says he did a lot of homework, because I listened to the interview on Tom Gresham's Gun Talk. I listened to the interview with Dick Metcalf on Tom Gresham's Gun Talk podcast. Well, I listen to the podcast because I never get a chance to listen to Tom's live show. Listen to the podcast. It's the most recent one. It was last Sunday, I believe. So it's probably not the most recent one, because by the time you hear this, there'll be another episode. But go back. I think it's the November 10th episode, if I'm not mistaken. And you'll hear Dick Metcalf interview on Tom Gresham's Gun Talk, which I listen to Gun Talk regularly. And he says he did a lot of research before he wrote the column, but I'm not so sure about that. Anyway, I mean, who am I to judge? So maybe I shouldn't. But the way it was written, and I didn't read the whole article, but I did read some of the salient points. I did some Google searching, and I found parts of the article. I don't subscribe to Guns and Ammo magazine, but maybe I should. Anyway, he talked about the well-regulated words in the Second Amendment. Now, I said before that I don't think that regulated means government regulation. It probably means well-equipped, well-trained. Right? That's probably what Alexander Hamilton meant by that. Well-equipped, well-trained. You know, in those days, they wanted the citizenry to be well-equipped and well-trained to be able to fight back against a possible tyrannical government. Because guess what, folks? That's what they just fought against. That's what they had just fought a bloody war to win their freedom against, a what? Tyrannical government. So doesn't it make sense that when they inserted the Second Amendment into the Constitution, doesn't it make sense that that's what they were thinking? The same thing. They were in fear that citizens would not have the ability to fight back, protect themselves, and protect their land, and protect their country, and their freedom in case government got out of control. Now, before you call me a wacko, before you call me a nutbag, and say, well, Bob, that'll never happen today. Really? Think about it. Just think about it. Just look at what's going on in our government. Just analyze it. Have an open mind, please. Your mind's like a parachute. Works best when it's open. And that's when you're more willing to accept ideas of change and not narrow-minded and closed-minded. And think about what could happen. What could happen if there's no more services available to the people who need government services? What could happen if there's no more money available to the people who need government money? What do you think people are going to do? I have a firm belief that when people get desperate, they do desperate things. A lot of them, not all of them. But I'll let you be the judge of what those desperate things might be and how you might need to protect yourself against the desperate people doing desperate things. So, I ask you, well-regulated Dick Metcalf. Well, I think he was wrong about that point. Now, and he was wrong about the fact, the whole premise of the article, that we should accept some government regulation. Now, do we have government regulation? Yeah, you bet we do. In most states, you have to take some training to get a concealed permit, right? To get a concealed carry permit. You have to take some training. And what I mean by that is you have to sit in a class, and you typically have to learn about the rules of engagement. You have to learn about the use of deadly force. You have to learn about the use of safe handgun storage. You have to learn about nonviolent dispute resolution. You know, you've got to learn about that stuff. Those are the basics. I'm a Texas concealed handgun license instructor. And now we have to only teach a minimum four-hour class plus the range time. So students that want to get their concealed handgun license in the state of Texas have to sit and listen to me or any of the instructors that are qualified to teach. They have to listen to me talk for 4 hours, and I have a good presentation put together, and I'm going to teach you the basics that you need to know about carrying a handgun in the state of Texas. And then I'm going to take you to the range, and I'm going to watch you shoot 50 rounds. And I'm going to make sure that you're safe and that you can qualify a ridiculously easy qualification course. And then I sign off on a piece of paper saying you've met the state minimum requirements. But it's not defensive training, but it is the very, very basics of what is commonly called the rules of engagement, or when and where you can carry your gun and how you can and cannot carry your gun. Now, someone called in a voicemail, which you're going to hear, stating that, well, in some states, someone can just open carry. They can just open carry without any testing, without any class. They can just strap a gun on their belt and open carry anywhere they want. Yep, that's true. That's true in some states. Now, I've made my feelings known about open carry. I will defend your right, and I will fight for your right to open carry. I just simply will not open carry. And I really don't recommend, if you ask me, Bob, do you recommend that I open carry? Well, that's a tough question for me to answer, but most of the time I'm probably going to say no, because there are some major benefits of concealed carry. I don't want to advertise to people that I have a gun. Okay? I almost got in serious trouble one time telling people that I have my gun on me. And if I'm open carrying, it's obviously right there. And they know I got a gun. I don't want to advertise to the bad guys that I have a gun. I don't want to give up that tactical advantage. I don't want the general public. I don't want the sheep. I don't want the sheeple who don't understand firearms to be calling the cops on me every day because they see me walking through Walmart or the grocery store or the gas station with a big Glock on the outside of my hip in a holster. I don't want them to go, oh, look at that. That man's got a gun. Let's call 911. Right? Because, and no offense to some of you out there, because some soccer mom that either doesn't like guns or afraid of guns or doesn't understand guns is afraid of it. And her four-year-old says, look, mommy, that guy's got a gun. I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that. Why should I deal with that when I can easily conceal? And I've trained to draw from concealment. I'm pretty good at it, by the way. I should get better. There's always room to improve. But I've been training for how long now? 8.5 years to draw from concealment. So why do I need to subject myself to the problems of open carry? But that's my personal opinion. I will fight for your right to open carry. I wish Texas had open carry. We don't. I wish we did. I wish Texas had open carry. And I will fight and do whatever I can to help advance the cause of open carry. I just simply won't do it. But if you want to do it, if it makes you feel good, if you want to deal with all that stuff, if you don't have a problem with it, if you've open carried and it's never caused you a problem, wonderful. But if I'm asked for my opinion, I'm probably going to say, avoid it if you can. All right? And I got a right to my opinion. You got a right to yours, and that's just kind of the way it is. And I've kind of stated that. But so, you know, the guy called in and he says, well, someone can just open carry and, you know, strap a gun to their hip and walk around and they have no training. That's true. In some states, you can do that. In some states, you do not need to have any classroom nor range time whatsoever to get a concealed weapons carry permit. But in many states, folks, you've already accepted the fact that you have to get training. Doesn't mean that you agree with it. Doesn't mean that I agree with it. But we've accepted it. Does that mean that we should accept more regulations? No, I think Dick Metcalf's wrong on that. We should not accept more regulations. Now, let's look at reality. And here's part of the point that Dick was trying to make before the whole firestorm started and he lost his job and everybody's crucifying him over what he said. What he was trying to say is, look how many regulations have actually eased. Look how we are winning. Look how gun rights have actually loosened. All 50 states now have some form of concealed carry. Illinois, who would have thought 4 or 5 years ago that Illinois would become a shall issue state? But they did. Who would have thought that Wisconsin would be a shall issue state and start issuing lots of licenses for people to carry? Check it out. Look at that. All right, the recent gun banners earlier this year tried to ban AR-15s and high-capacity magazines. In a couple states, they were successful, but largely, their efforts fell flat on their feet. Why? Because we fought back. We fought back in huge numbers. We fought back, and we won. Look how many gun laws are actually easing. Look how many restrictions and regulations in most states are being rolled back. There are a few, like Colorado and New York, that tightened their gun regulations. But folks, you know, back in the 90s, if you floated the idea that one day all 50 states are going to have some form of concealed carry, yeah, right, you'd have been laughed at. My Texas concealed handgun license, you know, good in like 36 or 37 states, something like that. Sorry, I'm driving, and I don't have the ability to get on handgunlaw.us and count the number of states. And I can't remember because I'm trying to focus on where I'm going, talking to you, and making sure that I do it safely. You know, but if you really analyze everything, we are making huge progress. Look at the Second Amendment Foundation, who I very much support, and I donate my money to the Second Amendment Foundation. Look how many lawsuits they have won. Look how many Supreme Court decisions they have been behind. They were a driving factor in getting Illinois to pass concealed carry. Now, I know some of you in Illinois listening to this say, oh, Bob, you wouldn't believe how restrictive it is. Yeah, it is restrictive. It's too restrictive. But guess what? Now you have it. Now you have concealed carry. You didn't have it a year ago. So we're winning. We're winning, and if we stick together, we're going to continue to win. And Dick Metcalf was trying to make that point. Now, he wrote some things that were not very appropriate, and he got himself fired. I understand. That's economics. That's business. You know, when Guns and Ammo subscribers start saying we're going to cancel our subscriptions, Guns and Ammo has to take that seriously. They're going to take that seriously because guess what? They're running a business. They're running a for-profit business. They're running a gun magazine. They want to make money. They want to have as many subscribers as possible. This is a free enterprise system in America. And the freedom of speech means that the government can't prosecute you for what you say, but it doesn't mean that you can't lose your job. We all have to remember that. There are still consequences that you may pay based on what you say or what you write. Like I said, it might not be a government arrest, or you might not get prosecuted by your own government. You shouldn't. That's unconstitutional. But yeah, you could lose your job. Apparently, I've lost a listener or two or three or whatever. Yeah, that's going to happen because of some things I said. And by the way, anybody who does a podcast, if you actually do a podcast, I bet you've said some things that you'd like to take back. Come on, that's just normal as human nature happens to all of us. And if you're the kind of listener that as soon as you hear one thing you don't like and you say, oh, that's it, forget it. Not listening to this turkey anymore. I can't take him seriously because of one thing that he said. Good luck. Good luck finding somebody that says something that you 100% agree with all the time. As a matter of fact, you know what? I don't want you to listen to this program. I don't want you to listen to my show if you agree with me all the time. I'm serious. I don't want you to listen to this if you agree with me 100% of the time. Number one, if you agree with me 100% of the time, you're not thinking independently as you should, because I'm going to make mistakes on this show, folks. I'm going to screw up. I'm going to make mistakes. There's no way around that. There's no way to be perfect. There's no way to put out a perfect show every single time. Nobody does. And so if you're a lapdog and you're loving everything I say, boy, don't do that, please, okay? But I do want to make this mistake. I do want to make this statement that we gun owners, we got to stick together and quit eating each other. We got to quit beating up on each other. When we start to beat up on each other, when we start to take a guy who's been a gun writer for 30 years, and when we ostracize him, when we basically beat up on him and gang up on him, folks, Dick Metcalf's being ganged up on. He's been doing this 30 years, okay? He's been our advocate for 30 years. The guy made a mistake. We have to quit eating our own. You know why we're winning the battle for gun rights? You know why? Because we stick together. And because the enemies of gun rights, they see that we stick together. They see that we mean business. But I think when we start doing this, when we start hammering on people, when we start being divisive, when we start carving each other up and chewing each other up and spitting them out, when we start to do that to our own, to the people who are helping us advance the cause of Second Amendment rights, I think we're hurting ourselves doing that. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Dick Metcalf shouldn't have got fired. I'm not saying that because I understand why he got fired, because it was a business decision. But how about we back off now? You know, I agree with Steve Zofie from the Power Factor Show. We do have to quit dividing each other. Now, I don't think that, he was trying to make the point that by me saying you're irresponsible for not getting training, he was trying to make the point that that's divisive. Well, I respectfully disagree with Steve on that. I don't think that's being divisive, and I explained why a little earlier. But I think what people are doing to Dick Metcalf right now, I think people are overreacting. I personally don't think that he's hurt the Second Amendment cause as much as everybody says. You know, did he give the enemy some fodder to talk about? Yeah, he did, but it'll blow over. I mean, he did. He gave the gun banners some things to point to and say, see, look at that. That's not good. Yep, he deserved to get fired over it. But, hey, folks, let's not eat our own. We are gun rights activists. We're in this together. We may not always agree, but we're in this together. And let's act like we're in this together, okay? That's all I want to say about that. I've been fired. I've been fired by some listeners. Now, I kind of think some of those listeners are a bit fickle. You know, but hey, I also get hired by a lot of listeners. So, you know, well over, actually it's been, my stats program said I've had over 2 million downloads of this podcast. It's probably more because I didn't start using the Blueberry stats program for about 8 months after I started. So it's probably far more than 2 million downloads. But anyway, I'm surprised, folks. When I got about 100 listeners, I was surprised. Back in the day when I first started the show, I thought 100 people? You know, now there's anywhere between probably 7,000 to 7,500 people a week now downloading the show. Something like that. Wow. I mean, that's, you know, I'm constantly amazed every week by that. So there are some listeners that are hiring me, and there are some listeners that are firing me. But all I want to say is let's just be careful that we don't eat our own. Because I don't think that's going to help our cause either. So with all that said, I made the points that I wanted to make. I'm at my next stop right now. So this is a good break point here. We'll take a quick break, and then I got some voicemails. I got a lot of really good voicemails that I've received from listeners. Thank you very much for sending them in. I have had these voicemails for quite some time, and I made the promise that I would get to them. Last week, I got to some of them. I'm going to get to the rest of them this week. Stay tuned.
When did you first know about the program, officially, I believe, called Fast and Furious? To the best of your knowledge, what date?
I'm not sure of the exact date, but I probably heard about Fast and Furious for the first time over the last few weeks.
How about the head of the criminal division, Lanny Brewer? Did he authorize it?
I'm not sure whether Mr. Brewer authorized it. I mean, you have to understand the way in which the department operates. Although there are operations, this one has gotten a great deal of publicity.
Yeah, there are dead Americans as a result of this failed and reckless program. So I would say that it hasn't gotten enough attention, has it, Mr. Attorney General?
It's not necessarily. I mean, there's an investigation that is underway, and we'll have to look at that to see exactly what happened with regard to.
Well, Mr. Attorney General,
I take very seriously the allegations.
Mr. Attorney General, do you take seriously? Mr. Attorney General, do you take seriously a subpoena signed by the Clerk of the House?
Of course.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, isn't it true that those cases that will go to trial in June, I have very limited time, I'm sorry, those cases are basically a bunch of meth addicts who did the buying, that you do not have what this program was supposed to produce. You don't have the kingpins. You don't have the places it went. What you have are the people that you already had on videotape many, many months before indictments were brought. Isn't this true?
There are cases that are important that we are trying to bring, that we want to try successfully, and they are part of a scheme. They are part of a scheme. You can't look at a case and it's as an individual matter and think it is unimportant, because small cases lead to larger ones.
We're looking at you, through our purchasers. We're looking at you. We're looking at your key people who knew or should have known about this, and whether or not your judgment was consistent with good practices, and whether or not instead the Justice Department is basically guilty of allowing weapons to kill Americans and Mexicans. So will you agree to cooperate with that investigation, both on the House and Senate side?
We'll certainly cooperate with all the investigations, but I'm going to take great exception to what you just said. The notion that somehow or other this Justice Department is responsible for those deaths that you mentioned, that assertion is offensive. And I want to tell you that.
But what if it's accurate, Mr. Attorney General?
It is the policy of the Justice Department to make sure that we do all that we can to protect law enforcement agents. It is one of the reasons why I have tried to look at, you know, a whole variety of methods, techniques that we can use to protect the lives of law enforcement agents. It is something that this country is not focused enough on.
What am I going to tell Agent Terry's mother about how he died at the hand of a gun that was videotaped as it was sold to a straw purchaser, fully expecting it to end up in the hands of drug cartels?
Well, you know, one will have to see exactly what happened with regard to the guns that are at issue there. And I've attended funerals, you know. This is something that this isn't theoretical, this is not political, this is extremely real for me as Attorney General.
It is for us too.
Okay, back with you. By the time you hear this, the pistol fighting dynamics nighttime course that Ben and I taught is over. And next week I'll have a little bit of a review, because I'm actually recording this before the class takes place. But I'll do the review and kind of give you some comments on that class. Pretty good sized group, I know, at this point, signed up for it. I think we're going to have a pretty good time over there doing that. If you guys want to train with Ben and myself, you got one last chance before the end of the year. And that's going to be on December 7th and 8th, which is a Saturday and Sunday. December 7th, we're teaching pistol fighting dynamics, and December 8th, rifle fighting dynamics. It's a two-day event. You get a discount if you sign up for both days, or you can pick one of those days and just come to one. Several of you are signed up for just one of those days, December 7th and 8th. So, and that's going to be in San Antonio. That's going to be at Cedar Ridge Range. It's going to be a little bit different place than where we normally teach. With that said, those are the training courses for the rest of the year. The Shooters Club has great discounts available to members, plus great material. We just put up another brand new video on team tactics about a week and a half ago. Pretty good stuff. I think you're going to like that. Shows Ben and I kind of doing some team tactics with our AR-15 rifles, just some basic stuff. And there's a lot of good videos up there, 17 or 18 different videos I believe we've got up there and some audio podcasts. That's only $75 a year or $8 a month. You can sign up. Go to www.handgunworld.com, handgunworld.com. Click the Shooters Club page. Hey, the holidays are coming, and if you're going to shop on Amazon, would you do me a favor? Would you go to handgunworld.com? Click my Amazon store and click that Amazon link that you see and go through my website. You'll pay the same price as you normally would with Amazon, but you'll help out my show. You'll support my show. And I'm going to be making a donation to the Gun Rights Radio Network and the Second Amendment Foundation. At the end of the year, I'm going to add up the Shooters Club signups from October 1st to the end of the year. And I'm going to make a small donation on our behalf. And when I say our behalf, the Handgun World podcast listeners. And then the last thing that I want to talk about is my Facebook pages. Actually, my Facebook page. Just search Handgun World on Facebook. Just do that search. You'll find me right away. Don't forget about my YouTube channel. And, of course, the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum. All kinds of ways that you can get a hold of me and talk to me. And a lot of people are choosing to step up and help sponsor the show. I want to talk about American Gun Oil. It's the only gun oil that I use, AmericanGunOil.com. I'm going to put a link in the show notes for a special page for Handgun World podcast listeners. You get free shipping. You get a discount on the shipping if you buy American Gun Oil. SturdyBelt.com. SturdyBelt.com. I love my Sturdy Belt. And there's an additional discount for Shooters Club members. When you get your password, you'll also get some coupon codes. And if you didn't get those, email me. And you can get some discounts from Sturdy Belt. You can get some discounts from On Your Six Designs. Excellent Kydex holsters for appendix carry and for behind-the-hip carry. OnYourSixDesigns.com. So don't forget about sturdybelt.com, onyoursixdesigns.com. The folks from Texas Law Shield, if you use Handgun World as the promo code, you'll get 2 months free with a 1 year membership. Remember, I interviewed the folks from Texas Law Shield or U.S. Law Shield. So if you're eligible for that program, get your 2 months free using handgunworld.com. And you can go to, or Handgun World coupon code, and you can go to uslawshield.com or texaslawshield.com and sign up that way. Don't forget about some of the other really good podcasts out there. Ben Branham's podcast, the Modern Self-Protection podcast. I listen to Ben do his show. The Politics and Guns podcast with Paul Lathrop and a whole bunch of others. I like to listen to that one. I listen to the Gun Dudes. Don't forget about them. And, of course, Michael Bain and, of course, Tom Gresham's Gun Talk. All right, let's get into the first voicemail.
Hey, Bob. In response to your response to your listener voicemail about how many rounds for a concealed carry permit and, you know, the testing and how your ability to shoot, I fully agree with you. I think before you get a concealed carry permit, you should be able to put lead down range where you want it, how you want it. But you do have to remember that when you're saying that, when people argue with you, there are a lot of states that have open carry, and there's no testing, no nothing. Some guy can go buy a gun, strap it on, hook it on the side of their belt, and carry wherever they want without any testing. So, you know, not to say you're wrong, but, you know, to play devil's advocate, you might think about that kind of thing and maybe say something more to you should have training before you ever carry a handgun, not just concealed carry. So anyway, thanks. Bye.
And that's the voicemail that I was referring to earlier in the show. Yeah, that's true. I think it's important to have training before you carry, whether it's concealed or open. And I'll say again, and I won't repeat it again, I don't think the government should make it mandatory that we have training, although some governments are already doing that. Some state governments are making you get some training before you get your concealed carry license. They're making you sit through a class and do a short qualification shooting exercise. But I agree with the caller. You know, there are places where someone can just, you know, throw on a gun, open carry, and go out there and carry. So thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Let's go to the next one.
Hey, Bob. Trucker Bob here. Calling about, well, a couple episodes now, people have been talking about the guy who called in about the extractor problems. A couple things. If I remember right, it's been a little while since I listened to that. Lady had a casing fall down between her glasses and her face and burn her eye or something like that. One thing I didn't hear mentioned was she wearing a ball cap? It's pretty important safety equipment we always use, eyes, ears, and a ball cap. That prevents it from, falling down in your glasses. Maybe she was, I don't remember. Another one would be, if Block will not send, pay to send the gun in, I'd have him look at the extractor, and if it's beveled in any way or chipped or cracked, if it's a new gun, if there's a defect in that, I would just contact them and see if they'd send him a new extractor. And if not, $6, $8, something like that would be cheaper than shipping it back, and just replace it. YouTube videos can help them with that. It's pretty simple. And the other side that I hadn't heard addressed was ammo. A lot of times you get light loads, they extract different than hot loads or anything in between. So, yeah, your powder charge and bullet weight, all that stuff has a lot to do with energy that goes into the working the action on the Glock pistol. So depending on the loads, it could be an ammo issue as well. So that was something else I hadn't heard addressed. So anyway, thanks for the show. Keep up the good work. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
You know, that's a good point, Trucker Bob, especially at the end where you talk about the different types of loads. They can extract differently. All kinds of things can make it extract differently. I think she was wearing a ball cap, but haven't heard much back from Dan on that. And Dan, if you're listening, give us some feedback, give us an update. A lot of people have been trying to help you, give you some advice and things. We'd like to know what's going on with your Glock and the extraction problems and the brass coming right back and hitting your wife. And so let us know how that's going. I'd appreciate that. And I think some of us would appreciate that. Thank you, Trucker Bob. Here's another one from Trucker Bob. Sorry, there's not another one from Trucker Bob. Let's go to Justin.
Hey, Bob, this is Justin from Amarillo. I was calling in response to your question about the Ruger SR series of pistols and magazine disconnect. I've had a Ruger SR9 for carry and for IDPA competitions for the last 2.5 years or so, and I've always been interested in also getting the Ruger SR40 and now the 45, just more of a collector type of thing. But everything I've read about them has always talked about there being three safety mechanisms, the thumb safety, the trigger safety, and that magazine disconnect safety. The thing, though, is if you don't like it, it's not hard to take out. And the way it works is it's just a piece that comes down when the magazine comes out and it blocks the striker from hitting the primer on the round in the chamber. The trigger and everything still functions, but the striker just hits that little piece there. And another thing some people may not know if you don't read the owner's manual is that it can damage the striker if you dry fire the gun without the magazine being in there because it hits that and repeated strikes so that could damage that firing pin. But again, you know, if you want to take it out, there's the Webb Grueger website has a video showing how to remove the striker for cleaning, and that disconnect piece just comes out and the gun still functions without it. If you're worried though about how that may look in court, if you ever have to use that gun to defend yourself, I don't know. You know, it doesn't seem the same thing to me as having a lightened trigger or the type of ammunition you use. But I'd be interested in if Mossad or someone who has experience trying cases or who's aware of legal precedents where safety mechanisms or other parts of the gun have been altered, if they were problems for the person who used the gun as far as legally goes. So thanks for your show, and I appreciate it. The loyal listener for over a year now, haven't missed a podcast, so keep it up. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Justin, and thanks for the info on removing the mag disconnect safety from the Ruger pistols. I'm very well aware of that. Never actually done it. Watched the video a few times, and I know it's pretty easy to take that out of there. So I didn't know that about the dry firing that you mentioned, but that's good to know, and I'm glad you shared that with the listeners. As far as the liability, you know, gee, I'm not an attorney. I think what I'm going to do is I'm probably going to send an email over to the folks over at Texas Law Shield, see what they have to say about that, and maybe I can get one of them back on here and talk a little bit more about that subject and some others, actually. My common sense says this, Justin. It's removing a safety device. You're removing a safety device. You have to understand something about this jury of your peers stuff. You know, we all say, well, we're going to get tried by a jury of our peers if something happens. Really? If I have to shoot somebody in self-defense, I don't think I'm going to get tried by a jury of my peers. As John Hathaway said, there better be some pretty good shooters on that jury for them to be my peers. There better be some people on that jury that have a lot of training classes under their belt. There better be somebody that's a Texas CHL instructor or somebody that teaches for a major training company or something like that. There better be some IDPA shooters or USPSA shooters or at least some steel shooters or bullseye shooters. There better be some good shooters, gun people on that jury. Or guess what? They're not a jury of my peers. And you know what, Justin? They're not going to understand that it was only a magazine disconnect safety. Okay? You know what they're going to hear from the other attorney? They're going to hear, well, this guy took away a safety device out of his gun. You know, my client was shot by a guy who decided to remove a safety device, and he was reckless and blah, 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 blah. And the non-gun people on the jury, most of them aren't going to know too much of a difference, no matter how you try to explain it. So, again, it's messing with a safety device. And to the non-gun people, to the low-information gun people that are going to be on your jury, because they won't be your peers, they may come from the same area, but chances are they're not going to be your peers, or maybe one or two, but you're not going to have a whole entire jury made up of your peers, okay? So think about that. I just would not take away a safety device that's on a gun, which is why I choose my guns that don't have very many safeties that I can just draw, press the trigger, and shoot, whether there's a magazine in it or whether there's not, or whether I have a good grip or not. And by the way, I want to say something, and I don't mean to be picking on a certain gun, okay? I saw this in training class last week. Last week, I helped John Payne teach advanced close-range gunfighting. Suarez International's Advanced Close Range Gunfighting. I helped teach that. Well, John was the main instructor. I was kind of a range safety officer. Plus, I was training. I was a student. Felt good to be a student. Here's what I saw. We were doing a drill where one person would face the target and another person would put their hand on his shoulder and face the other way and begin running. And the drill was to see how far the runner could run before the shooter was able to draw and fire one round at the paper target. Okay? Well, guess what? I saw a student who had an XDS, a Springfield XDS, that he had just got back from Springfield, by the way. After the recall, he had just got it back. And when he drew the XDS to fire one round on target, we saw him draw his gun, and we waited for the bang. And there was no bang. And there was still no bang. And by the time the runner was way up range, we hear bang. Okay, and the runner had covered like, you know, 15, 20 yards before we heard a bang. And I asked the shooter, what happened? I saw you draw, but I didn't hear a bang. What happened? Did something malfunction? You know what he said? He didn't have the grip safety properly depressed. In other words, he didn't have a good enough, solid enough grip on the gun to make it go bang, to disengage the grip safety. I don't make this stuff up, folks. I don't make this up. I watch this stuff happen in training classes. I see it happen on IDPA ranges. See, the pressure got to him. He wanted to draw quickly and put a round on target, you know, and that pressure got to him. And that's what I say can happen to you in a real fight. The pressure, the intensity is going to get to you. You're going to freak out. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Am I saying you shouldn't carry an XDS? Nope, it's not what I'm saying. If you're going to carry something with a grip safety, you better do two things. Train a lot, and understand the risk of possibly not getting a good grip on that firearm and preventing it from going bang. And that's all I'll say on that. That's just all I'm going to say on that. Don't call me an XD hater or anything like that. I saw it happen in a training class. And I felt I had to be obligated to report it to you. Okay, let's listen to the next voicemail.
Hey, Bob, this is Damian from Dallas. First, I'd like to say happy fourth year anniversary of your podcast. Just coming to work here, listening to podcast 249. I'm having to catch up on a lot of things, but I wanted to comment on how within the gun culture, we don't really fuel the anti-gunners when we argue amongst ourselves. But I'd like to point out, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'd like to point out one particular subject that that the evidence shows that it does do us harm, which is one example is open carry versus concealed carry. A lot of us believe in both. I believe open carry should be I think open carry is a good thing, although I choose the concealed carry. And some people that open carry believe concealed carry is a good thing. But then you have people on the opposite side of the fence where they believe open carry is bad because they conceal carry, and some believe conceal carry is silly because you should be able to open carry. Well, what happens is when people in the open carry movement especially start walking around with long guns in public and scaring the public who are uninformed, they do it with good intentions to educate people on our rights, but you're actually scaring the snot out of people. They don't get a chance to sit down with you and discuss why you're doing it. They just go home. Hey, did you see that, you know, those crazy people with, you know, rifles on their backs or shotguns? And it causes damage because those are the people that are going to end up voting without being educated. They can vote against our rights. I know that Mark Walters from Modern American Radio and Tom Gresham from Gun Talk mentioned how this is dividing us or causing harm as the Starbucks debacle example, where open carry people have, you know, basically we went a step backwards because of it. And the last thing I'd like to say is, from an anti-gunner's perspective, move my cause forward and have people vote against gun rights. I would go to every state and get every anti-gunner I could and let us all open carry rifles around the cities to scare the living snot out of people, and it will help the cause. So some people that open carry and think that that's helping us may not be so. So just wanted to point that out. You don't know what your opinion is on that, but I know that Tom Gretchen and Mark Walters believe that those kind of things do divide it. Good, great podcast. Take care, buddy.
Well, Damien, that's interesting. That's an interesting voicemail. I heard that same episode that Tom Gresham did, and I think what Tom Gresham was talking about is the knuckleheads that went into Starbucks and they were just being stupid. You know, they were open carrying their rifles, which is perfectly legal to do where they were, but just not a good idea. You know, it's kind of rubbing the gun control issue into their face, into Starbucks's face. Now, open carry versus concealed carry. You know, earlier in the show, I stated specifically that I'll fight for your right to open carry. I want everybody to have the right to open carry if they wish to do it. I just won't do it. And I'm not going to repeat myself because that's what I said earlier. But, you know, Damien, that's true. Sometimes the open carry and concealed carry people kind of do battle with each other. I haven't seen a whole lot of it, but I see your point on that. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Hey, Bob, this is Damien from Dallas. Just wanted to comment on episode 249 real quick when you talk about how someone can close the distance with a knife or just with any type of weapon. I think you mentioned 18 feet or how fast they can close distance, 18 feet. I actually did a training drill with a friend of mine here in Texas at his ranch where, and this is a kind of a neat setup. I don't know if you have the flexibility to set this up at one of your training sessions, but they took the base of a lawnmower, a small lawnmower with four wheels. Of course, the engine's not there, but just the base part of the lawnmower, and they removed the handles. So it's almost just like a platform with four wheels, but you can also build one out of wood, I guess. But what they did is they actually rigged a target, a paper target of a bad guy on this platform with wheels. And in their case, it was a old lawnmower base. And they had a rope attached to it, and the wheels of the lawnmower would run across some rails. They created some simple rails. And then the rope came all the way up to where the shooter is, and underneath you there's an eye hook, and the rope continues to go behind you. And what you have is you have a friend or someone else holding onto the rope, which you can't see. And the scenario is that we would actually have to draw and fire as this person behind us starts to run the opposite direction. Now, you can't see when they're going to start to run. All you see is the target starting to move. And at 21 feet, that distance and the speed that target gets up to you was amazingly fast. Initially we were drawing from the hole, we were drawing, obviously from the holster, from our concealed holsters. And, the first time I did it, I had a Beretta, my Beretta. And by the time I drew my weapon, removed the safety or, took the safety off, leveled the gun at probably chest height to me, I was able to pull off one round before that target was right on my face. Now, with some practice, I was able to get two or three rounds out, but it's just a lot faster than people think. So I think that would be a cool drill. I don't know if you could ever set that up for your students, but it's an eye-opener because you hear a lot of people say that how fast someone closes the distance, where in this scenario, that target is moving at the distance of a real person running because there's a real person pulling the rope. So it's not some, you know, hydraulic system, that whatever. It's an actual real person, one of your buddies, running the opposite direction as fast as they can toward away from you. Therefore, the target is running towards you at that same speed. I have a YouTube video of us doing this drill. I don't have a video of me performing the drill. I was videoing, doing the video, but I have a friend of mine.
That's interesting, Damien. I'd love to set something up like that and test it out. You know, speaking of closing the distance, that exercise we did at advanced close-range gunfighting, what we found is I think it was about between 5 and 7 yards was the average. The runner, again, running the opposite direction of the shooter, the runner would start running. The shooter didn't know when the runner was going to run. Once the shooter detected that the runner was running, he would draw his pistol and fire a round at the target. Well, that's kind of what's going to happen in real life. You're not going to know when someone starts closing the distance on you, are you? Most likely, you're not going to know when the bad guy starts coming after you. By the time you realize it and draw your gun, he can cover 5 to 7 yards, and that's about right. We were finding that it was about 5 to 7 yards on the average. That's a long way, folks. That's a long way. So when people talk about the 21-foot rule, when they talk about keeping people 21 feet or 7 yards away from you, that's kind of real, because that's – now, that's assuming that you don't move. If you move, of course, if you bust off the X, if you get away and you learn and you've been trained on how to do that, that's why we teach move first and then draw. When you're practicing your movement drills, move first, then draw. Okay, your goal is to get out of the line of danger. That's what busting and getting off the X means. Okay, if you move, well, then that makes things even more difficult for the bad guy to close in on you. So think about that. But that's kind of good. That's a good way, Damien, to practice it. Another way you can practice it is the way we just talked about it. And that is, or the way I talked about it earlier, that is if you can find a range or a training class where you can pull that off. Okay, where that'll allow you to do it. That's one of the reasons why these classes are so valuable, is because you get to practice these things and analyze these things and collect data and figure out what's going to work for you and what's not going to work for you. So good job, Damien. That was kind of an interesting way to set that up. That's interesting. I'm not mechanically inclined enough. I'm not the engineering type to be able to set something like that up. But I'd love to go to a place where something like that's set up and practice that drill and practice that shooting skill. That'd be pretty cool. Okay, folks, that pretty much covers the voicemails. And I hope that this show maybe got you thinking about some stuff. And I'm sure, as I mentioned earlier, you don't agree with everything, and that's okay. I really enjoy this voicemail feedback. Now, the last couple weeks, I've put a lot of voicemails up, and I've gotten caught up now on the voicemails. Keep them coming. I'll probably wait another couple weeks and put some more voicemails up, because I'm sure there'll be more that'll be coming in. Next week, I got an interesting topic for you. You're going to want to listen next week. You're going to want to be, you know, paying close attention to what's going on next week and the topic matter and stuff like that, because there's going to be some pretty, pretty interesting stuff. Okay. With all that said, thanks for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And I found that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight and shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.